we've heard a lot in recent years about the increasing role of social media in political campaigning. I'm not sure, though, whether we actually know what that might mean just yet. Change, it's slowly coming. A lot of Tony Abbott's Twitter followers, for example, seem to like cutting and pasting the same tweets. We know that. And Kevin Rudd seems rather keen to hire anyone who once ran a Facebook page even remotely related to the Obama campaign. But just how social media savvy are the parties in this current campaign? And perhaps more interestingly, what's the potential in politics? There's around 11 million Australians on Facebook, 2 million using Twitter. The potential is undeniable. So what is the future of politics in this interconnected and data-mined world? Joining you to take stock of the now, throwing forward to the future, Stuhl Gerrion, he's a technology writer and broadcaster, and John McTernan, he's the former Director of Communications for Julia Gillard. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good morning, Jonathan.
Stuhl Gerrion, I mentioned that Tony Abbott's fake Twitter followers, we've heard a bit about that in this campaign.
Ah, yes. Yes. Look, he wouldn't be alone in having
them. I dare say not, because Kevin Rudd's got a lot of numbers and we needn't assume that all those are genuine. How does that work? And tell us a bit about bots and fakery.
Oh, look, at one level, everyone who's on Twitter has at least some level of fake Twitter followers, because there are robots, bots, automated Twitter accounts, if you like, that will... they'll notice you mention insurance, or you're thinking of insurance for your house, and so a bot that has been hired by an insurance company will start following you in the hope that you will follow back, and then it will send you a private message advertising home insurance.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes, it's all a pretty low-rent area, and really in terms of advertising, it's currently mostly done by the, you know, the kind of advertising that is at the less salubrious end of the scale.
And I'm guessing, though, that the way in which our political parties are using this is not anywhere near as sophisticated as aforementioned Ukrainians.
Sadly not. No, not yet. Look, at the moment, I wouldn't like to point the finger at anyone actually doing it who's a direct member of a party campaign. I'm sure there's lots of plausible deniability there if it's happening. But what you do is that you hire a programmer, and most of the chaps doing this seem to be out of Eastern European countries, and for a small amount of money, $70 or so US per 10,000 Twitter followers was the account. The price I saw recently, they will have machine-generated these tens of thousands of Twitter followers in advance. They will have had them putting out a series of nondescript tweets about the weather and their life and quotes from famous dead white men to give the impression that they're a real person on Twitter. And so they don't get banned as being spammers.
Yep.
And then once they're there, you hire them, and then they can just monitor for messages. So if you mention, I don't know, that you're interested in the environment, then it might tell you that the Greens are all communists or something like that.
Stronger borders.
It's pretty basic. Stronger borders, stop the boats, stop the bots, really, I suppose, isn't it?
But, John, I mean, the level of awareness in the back rooms of Australian politics around this sort of potential, I mean, the Australian parties switched on to this kind of stuff?
Yes, I think both parties have been in this area for a while. We built up a very big digital capacity in the Prime Minister's office, and Julia Gillard is still the most popular Australian politician on Facebook. And Facebook is really where the main game is. You said 11 million Australians use Facebook. About half of them use it regularly. Women, particularly suburban women, we know from focus groups, they'll look at Facebook in the morning, first thing in the morning, they'll look at it last thing at night. It's a huge channel to communicate with battlers and battler families. It's also got a capacity to complement what you're doing in the mainstream media. Twitter's a kind of... it's a game for the gallery. You tweet if you want the gallery to know what you're doing and saying. But I think 9 out of 10 people on Twitter are just sitting there watching Twitter, not actually participating.
It's a bit, of a closed shop, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. And what John's describing there, Stuhl Gerrion, is around dissemination. It's sort of getting
yes.
your message
yes.
out. But I wonder if that's the true potential of this sort of technology. If the the great possibility doesn't in fact lie in the data behind the user.
Very much so. And look, throughout this year and into next year, we're going to be hearing the buzzword big data. And I saw a lovely line earlier this week where someone said the only people saying big data are marketers and self-promoters. For everyone else, it's just data, and we've always been using data. The thing is that now, though, is that we're collecting it on a much vaster scale than we ever have before. It's much more personal information. It is often live, in real time, and includes location information. And at the moment, everyone from Google down to your smallest mobile app developer is collecting this data, and yet the theory of what we can do with it is lagging so far behind. I think we're looking at a vast generational, I called it the Facebook experiment in one column. Simply, we're doing it. We've no idea how it's going to turn out. We do know it's going to transform society in some way. Along the way, some things and some people will be burnt in the process, but we will transform all this in some fashion.
We're talking about data, about social media and campaigning. Stilgherrian and John McTernan with you. I mean, one of the interesting things, Stilgherrian, traditionally the sort of knowledge we've had of a body of people has been through polling, which is always a retrospective glimpse at people's behaviour. With the sort of data now that we're getting our hands on, we can be a lot more predictive, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And just a few snippets of things we already know how to do and that have been revealed in the last few years. We can predict people's voting behaviour from their music playlists, which they share with their friends online. We can
Nickelback is a absolute giveaway, for
example.
Yes,
Mr. Hockey made that mistake, didn't he? Yeah. We can tell when a young man is gay or not by the patterns of friend formation that he's putting on Facebook before he knows himself that he is gay. There's some research at MIT or one of the other Ivy League American universities that shows that.
Good Lord.
All manner of things. And the thing about once you start having huge data sets which combine everything from shopping lists to music preferences to the one I like is, this questionnaires that say, what breed of dog would you be? And you actually look at it and it is a thinly disguised psychological profiling questionnaire to work out your decision-making behaviour. And I kind of like to imagine these scary scenarios where you predict that ahead and you have all of these automated robots on Twitter or more likely on Facebook friends, and some of your Facebook friends are not necessarily actual humans, that they will be more aware than you are of your political hot buttons, and your mobile phone registers the fact that you've entered a particular suburb, and your friend noticing that you were there will happily mention something about how the previous lot screwed up funding for the local sports stadium.
The first party, John, to really get a grip on this in the local political scene is going to have an extraordinary advantage.
Look, I think that's right. I think there is an arms race going on in the digital sphere. What we're trying to find are the ways I can get close enough to you to have the conversation, the human conversation, that engages you and gets you to think, yeah, actually, I'll give Julia Gillard a second chance. I'll give her a second look. You've got to be persuading in the persuasion moment.
It's opening that space. It's process, Stilgherrian, of getting close that is changing so much in our world. Our means of proximity are shifting hugely.
Absolutely, and it's a long game. I think the implicit message in what John's just said, there's a lot of short-term social media marketing that talks about identifying the influencers in a social network and targeting them with your message. Well, in fact, there are people who've actually done proper peer-reviewed mathematical modelling of this stuff, and they say that's pointless. People will change their mind when they're in the mood to have their mind changed, and you have to be there with the message at that point.
Still, Gary, in 50 years' time, are we going to recognise our political forums and our political processes?
20 years' time, I don't think we'll recognise them. Maybe
next
even
week.
10.
Pin it down to details, though, given what we now know about what's emerging and how things are shaping. I mean, a parliament like we have, electorates like we have, the process of election. I mean, all of that is a bit horse and buggy, a bit steam train.
Very much so. And then I think back to that wonderful 1960s movie by Peter Cook, The Rise and Rise of Michael Rimmer, where everybody was voting on every single thing every night. And they got so they got so sick of it. And in the end, he said, "Well, citizens, I'm sorry I've made the wrong decision. So we will have one more vote. And if you vote yes, you'll never have to vote on anything ever again."
That's the dream, John McTurtle. Mm.
No, I think it's about intelligent interaction, isn't it? Because we know with consultation, if anybody's been involved in consultation, online, offline, that people have an ability to be quite selfish and self-indulgent in being consulted. You know, as in, I want to drive on a road with no road humps when I go to work, but I want road humps on the road that goes past my house because that's better for me. And this politics, in the end, and this is the most difficult thing to actualize in online or offline discussions, politics is a choice of priorities. It's a choice of allocating resources across time or resources across geography or across race or gender or age. It's kind of those kinds of politics is about trade-offs. And it's the most difficult thing in expanding political discussion beyond political parties is to get a discussion honestly about trade-offs. I've made this trade-off because I'm Labour. I've made this trade-off because I think that the state's GDP, the product of the state, needs to be increased faster than the product of another state. Or I think rail is better than road for these reasons. That requires a kind of honesty on the side of the political parties. These are all the options, and this is all the data, but we've chosen these for these reasons. So a bit more opening up why I've chosen this and not that. Now, that is enabled by the internet, but in a sense, the public aren't in political parties anymore, and they're not politically active anymore, because they can do more things for themselves than they could do 30 years ago or 40 years ago. A richer Australia, a better educated Australia, is actually an Australia well more able to look after itself. And we have to find the space to identify these issues are worth a national conversation, or these are worth a local conversation, or these are worth a neighbourhood conversation. And then inject into it, you know, in the end, electricity didn't transform, didn't transform society until it was embedded into the way that buildings were built and cities were built and railways were laid out. Internet, social media will not transform things until it's embedded. You know, E should go back to being the fifth letter of the alphabet. E-politics, e-democracy, no thank you. I want, you know, democracy with this embedded in it. So where's the place you can use this for the best? And I think that's an area, we go back to a point you made earlier. Whoever gets there first scoops the pool. At the moment, what you have is hierarchical, industrial age, political and governmental organizations whose biggest challenge is to face insurgents. It could be insurgents from the left, like the Greens, insurgents in the center, like the Democrats, insurgents from the right, like Clive Palmer or Bob Catter, or One Nation. Insurgency is an expression of the fact that our politics doesn't fit. Hierarchical organizations do not meet with network societies and network economies.
And thanks there to Stilgherrian, a technology writer and broadcaster, and John McTurnan, former Director of Communications for Julia Gillard, The Future of Politics. It's a changing and movable feast. Sunday Extra here on RN. Jonathan Green with you.